human resources and employment law advice on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with the HR Suite, now part of NFP, providing brokering expertise in commercial insurance, employee benefits, HR and health and safety.
And good morning to you, Caroline. I hope you're keeping well this fine May morning. And we'll just get started in a number of queries. I was absolutely gobsmacked about this. And I just thought, first of all, it's kind of rude. But there's a story out this morning, Caroline, about the high number of people who are not turning up for interviews for public jobs. It comes in from Ken Fox, who is a brilliant journalist, and he's so skilled in using the Freedom of Information tool to get out information, to find out really vital information that people would not know about otherwise. And he's reporting on this morning about the high number of people who don't show up for job interviews.
And I would agree with you, it's really bad form, because ultimately you are potentially taking the place of somebody else if you don't show up. And second of all, it's a waste of everybody's time. So the courtesy of just letting people know that you're not going to turn up, I think is a basic, you know, respect principle, isn't it? But it's definitely one of the things that we've seen where, I suppose, candidates now, it's a jobs market, we've nearly full employment, and candidates will send out their CV to a number of different potential employers, and then they will basically go with the one potentially that offers them the job first. So one of the big things now is employers trying to delay a big lag between when they invite somebody for interview and when that's going to be. So a lot of the time now when people send in their CV, before there used to be the closing date and maybe 2 weeks later, and then 2 weeks later there was all these different stages. You know, that's fine for really senior jobs, but for a lot of jobs now that timeline has shortened a lot, because a lot of the initial stages are now being done online, again to expedite the process and make sure that you've got the candidates.
And these are the findings from Ken Fox. Nearly a third of candidates invited to interview or an online assessment for jobs in the public sector did not show up or withdrew from the process. Figures from the Public Jobs Service show that more than 100,000 applicants were invited to take part in recruitment competitions during 2024 and last year. However, more than 30,000 candidates did not attend or withdrew, with survey responses suggesting issues like low pay and long wait times as factors.
And I suppose none of that, you know, is a surprise insofar as the candidate would have known those things before they applied. So that's why it kind of makes it more disappointing, really. You know, you've done, it's very public knowledge in terms of what the rates are and what you're, you know, what you're applying for. We've new legislation as well, Trasa, coming this summer, which is the pay transparency legislation. And that's going to mean that you will transparently be able to see what any job you're going for is going to be in terms of salary and benefits. So again, that's another layer to avoid, you know, the idea is to facilitate pay transparency so companies are really getting prepared for it. But it means that as a candidate, you're not waiting, going through a process and then being offered either benefits or terms and conditions that are less than your expectations.
And it's interesting because that would tie in it's just quite extraordinary that, you know, the levels of people who drop out and how pay is a factor. And of course, when we look at pay, then we're seeing, especially in the public sector and notwithstanding the 9 billion euro surplus the government have at the moment, there could be more of a squeeze, for example, if this war continues in the Middle East, and certainly there certainly are no signs of abating. So it could be unfortunately the case that we could looking at a different situation maybe in a couple of years when there might be a lot more eagerness to take part in interviews or online assessments for public jobs.
And like most things are cyclical. You know, we know that, you know, generally there's ebbs and troughs. Like, we've also seen huge statistics and research telling us that AI has replaced a lot of jobs, where we've seen big tech companies go through an awful lot of redundancies and restructuring. And the reason for that, I suppose, is a lot of jobs have been replaced by either robotics or AI. So we're definitely seeing a big shift out there in terms of the type of jobs people will be now going for in the future and what are the skills of the future. And we see now people are very much focused on what job they do and how can they use AI to automate parts of the job. Maybe all the job mightn't change significantly, but definitely elements of it can be automated. Even in simple tasks we do now, if you go into your local supermarket, you can self-scan. You know, the robotics and the taking advantage of technology, and definitely AI is something that's changing the world of work as well, Trasa.
Now, Caroline, a query has come in for you from Jer, and they ask, I have a query for Caroline regarding employment, the Contractual Retirement Ages Act of 2025. This has been promised by the government for years and eventually was signed into law by the President in December, just December gone. The Minister is now saying we must await WRC guidelines. Two questions for you, Caroline, says Jer. One, have you any update when these guidelines will be available? And two, regardless of guidelines, is this not now the law of the land and employers are obliged to apply it? Thank you, says Jer.
Jer, that's a really knowledgeable, well-researched question. So Jer gets 10 out of 10 for that this morning. So two things. One is, even if this piece of legislation, for your listeners just to be aware, is focused on the piece of legislation that says you can't get anyone to retire as a contractual retirement age that's less than the state pension age. So that's what this is basically bringing to light. And ultimately, the legislation hasn't yet been enacted, but ultimately, I would say very much people are practicing with this legislation in mind. And secondly, I would say that even without this piece of legislation, you can't force anybody to retire at any age, whether that be 66, which is the pension age, or indeed any other age, because ultimately, if somebody wants to work on longer, the obligation on the employer is to objectively justify that retirement age. And if the employer can't do that, the person can work on longer. So there's a definite process that's required, because people are living longer, they're healthier, people want to work longer. Some people joke and say, well, maybe they don't want to, but they have to for financial or other reasons. But for a lot of people, they like their job, they like the social element to it, as well as obviously the financial benefits as well. So, Ger, even though that piece of legislation isn't yet enacted, and we've no idea as to when that guideline will be produced by the WRC, hopefully over the next few months. And Trasa, we might revisit that next month and just give Ger an update if it has been enacted.
Absolutely.
You know, just to keep the update going.
So we'll see what we're hearing from the Workplace Relations Commission. So Caroline, the general rule is that someone can't come along and say to you, oh, you're 66 now, you need to retire. I presume there are exceptions, obviously, if it's a role that involves a physical strength, that might be an area where a person would be obliged to retire. But in general, the main now is that you cannot be forced to retire on age grounds.
No, and even with physical strength, because everybody will have a different maybe ability, etc., unless somebody is medically certified by an occupational health practitioner as not fit to do the job, then ultimately, you know, if they want to work on, they can. Now, for a lot of your listeners, they'll be saying, God, I'm so excited, I'm counting down the days to my retirement. You know, I definitely don't want to work on longer. And obviously, they can retire. But the important thing in Ireland is we've really strong protections for people on the nine equality grounds. everything from age to disability to gender to family status, and age being the relevant one here linked to retirement. So basically you can't force somebody to retire just because they've hit a specific age. The idea is that it's got to be objectively justified. So it's one to tread carefully if you're an employer, and if you're an employee and you do want to work on, the sooner you let your employer know, the better, because then they've got the heads up and they can work with you to try and facilitate that retirement that people have in mind.
Now, Caroline, if I can bring up a case that that was heard at the Workplace Relations Commission, which I thought was, well, very welcome and also very salient to all of us about how we use language and how we use words and how we are thoughtful about everybody in our community, including minorities. This is a case of a worker who made derogatory remarks referring to the traveller community, who said a sales consultant's remark about a pair of a derogatory term about a member of the traveller community was deeply hurtful, offensive and profoundly inappropriate to him, because he is a member of the traveller community. This man won €15,000 in compensation for harassment. This was a man called Kieran Riley, who's a member of the travelling community, and he won the sum on foot of a complaint that he made to the Workplace Relations Commission under the Employment Equality Act 1998 against his former employer. And it was a derogatory term about the traveller community, and that was made in his presence at a sales meeting. Again, we always have to be mindful of our language and to speak about people and speak about particular groups in society with respect.
Absolutely. And like, it's a really relevant case because there is actually so many incidents that we come across. And even though, you know, when people hear this, they go, God, in this day and age, you think people would know better. But unfortunately, we still have lots of these cases. So the big message is, remember, dignity and respect applies. And yeah, in no inappropriate language, even if it's meant as banter.
Yeah, banter. You won't get away with banter.
No, definitely not. And particularly in the work environment, you need to remember that and in extracurricular activities, at a sales meeting or a Christmas party or anything else as well, same things apply. So you just need to be mindful of dignity and respect applies to everybody. And even if it's not a direct comment to the person, saying something in their presence is not considered appropriate. So again, one incident of harassment meets the definition of harassment. So all the more important why somebody wouldn't do that. So training, reading the policy, and just common sense, which sometimes isn't that common, is really important in this area.
You said it, Caroline. We've been speaking to Caroline Reedy of NFP HR Solutions, an Aon company. And Caroline is one of the country's leading experts in human resources, answering your questions. Thank you, Caroline.